close.
Yeah, we're close enough. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Laurel Mountain Highlands area of Narcotics Anonymous 5th Annual Unity Retreat. We'd like you to join us in celebrating the recovery and fellowship that we have come to know, need, and deserve in our lives. We encourage you to share in our NA Unity through your experience, strength, and hope in our wide variety of workshops. This is an open retreat. All are welcome to attend. However, we ask that only addicts share in the workshops. In accordance with the seventh tradition, we are fully self-supporting, and I do thank each and every one who registered. We should remember that our actions this weekend are a direct reflection on Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. Let's carry the NA message, not the myth. What is the NA message? Our message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict that still suffers, because that is all we have to give. That no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction. And that's taken from the basic text, page 65. The NA way. In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. When NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross addicts, or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests there are two diseases, that one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities, not the differences. To the press, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. If any member of the press are present, please come to the registration table where you will be referred to our public information chairperson. We respectfully ask that no pictures be taken during the Unity Retreat for the press. If any NA members are approached by the press, please refer them to the registration table. Remember that no one person represents NA. Please do not attempt to represent NA to the press alone. Thank you. Hi everyone, my name is Rick and I am an addict. I'd like to welcome everyone to this workshop, which is entitled Living the Program. Will you please help me open with a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Amen. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Could we please have somebody do the reading of We Do Recover, up here with a nice light.
Hi, family. My name's Kim, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Kim.
We do recover, and at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs. We all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best we can to the bitter end, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last chance. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you. Okay, I would like to introduce the first speaker, and I wanted to give him just a little plug and share with you guys one thing real briefly. When I got here Friday night with my boys, set up my tent, this was one of the first people that greeted me and made me feel at home. And we're neighbors up on the hill with our tents and that, and I don't know, it's, I've seen him, and it's been, I don't know, so I'll let him tell you his story, but he greeted me and made me feel at home here, so he has a little special place in my heart. And so we'll give you Tony, and his home group is Keep the Faith, and he's from Erie.
I'm at it, name Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Man, oh man, I'm blessed. Like, I'm originally from Pittsburgh, and like, man, living the program. I'm sure enough doing that on a daily basis. I came to Erie May 27th of 1999, came to the Salvation Army, and like, I finished the program, but I ended up staying, and like, I became assistant house man, and like, things started to happen. I got involved in Narcotics Anonymous, and like, I went to a meeting, and like, I met my sponsor, and like, you know, like, he came out of Salvation Army too, and like, we connected. And like, I was a mess, you know what I mean? Because I needed some direction, and like, he got it to him. I'm a little nervous. I got involved, and like, our area just broke off from Central Western, and like, we're our own area called Gina, and like, I'm the agent, I vice chair, and like, I do a lot of service work, a lot. Let me tell y'all, I'm a little bit about me. I'm from Pittsburgh, and like, I used to live to use. Man, I like tore myself up, man. Like, I came around Narcotics Anonymous in 1990. Try to stay clean. I came in and out, various many of times. And like, I got a sponsor. He would give me a tape. I would listen to it. I wouldn't follow suggestions. I was just a hard-headed person. You know, like, it took me about 4 or 5 times to come through the rooms to get this. And like, today, I take suggestions, I listen, I ask a lot of questions, if it don't feel right, I'm going to the next person and ask another question about the same thing until I get the right answer. You know, like, my God gives me anything I want, you know what I mean? I never dreamed about being at a spiritual retreat speaking. You know, like, God makes things happen. And, like, for me, like yesterday was my mom's birthday, and she's gone. And, like, my brother and sister, I called them and told them I was coming up here. And they was like, okay, do that. So they're like, they're my support. My brother and my sister and my dad, they're my support. And, like, I tell them everything I do. And everything's remotely around Narcotics Anonymous. You know what I mean? I live it, you know, like a day-to-day thing. I take it to work, take it home, everything. Man. God, I mean, like, I don't know. I started working steps in my life, and like, I made some mistakes in my life, but God shows me how to do them better, and what not to do, and what to do. This weekend has been great. You know, I share with a lot of people. I do a lot of recovery things with a lot of people. I live with my sponsor. He shows me the way. You know what I mean? We do things together as one. We travel a lot together. I don't know. For me, it's just like I'm trying to stay right in the middle where I'm supposed to be. Like, I cry a lot like my sponsor. Let me tell y'all a little story. We live in a 2-bedroom apartment. My sponsor used to work 11 to 7. And I used to be scared to stay there because, like, I know I'm a big guy, but, man, I used to be petrified of the house because, you know, like, I had these fears of being alone, you know what I mean? And, like, I used to tell him, man, are you going to go to work? He said, yeah. I don't like that. And I would have all the lights on and stuff, right? And like, God was, you know, I'm sitting there watching TV, God was, you know, I'd be reading my best thing, and God would be like, man, turn all the lights off and just set up one light on, man. Like, because you don't pay light bills, you know, get with it. You know, let's go through this. And, like, after a while, I got comfortable of coming home from work and being the only one there. And, like, I don't watch scary movies. That's out the question. You know what I mean? I don't do that. Scary movie, come on, I'll catch you later. We ain't renting them. So if me and you dating and your kids want to watch scary movies, I ain't the one. You can forget that. I'll be a chicken, whatever you want to call me. But like, Narcotics Anonymous is teaching me that I can get over the fears. I know for me, like, I can remember my last get high because I was living in a crack house. Thought it was my house. Didn't want nobody to come there. Drop me out the corner. Oh, man, I read your house. No, man, drop me out the corner. I thought I was missing something, but I wasn't. I got up May 26th and got up, caught the bus, and went to St. Francis Detox. And right then and there, my grand sponsor saw me to Erie. Him and his counselor got up, they made some phone calls, and got me in Erie. And like I thank him to this day. And that's when my recovery started, up in Erie. And like I went home for one visit and got real, real scared. My stomach started bobbling, you know what I mean? Like I couldn't go to my ex-girlfriend's house because she lived on the set on Brushton. And, like, let me tell y'all, like, I was in this relationship for 3 years with her, and when I left, she was like, where you at? I said, I'm in Erie and getting myself together. She was like, wow, I'm proud of that because you just sent me through hell. And, like, I had to make some amends to her, man. Like, I said, once you hit me downtown because I can't come over there. My stomach, I can't take it. She's like, all right. So I made these amends. I'm like, a big guy I am, cried to her again. She was like, man, you look so different. And like, I said, it's only because of God, baby, because like, without God, there ain't no me. And she was like, wow, what's going on? You looking different, you acting different. I gave her a hug. I said, I got to go. There's a meeting. I'll call you later. You know, like, since this process, I've been up here almost two years and four months. And, like, I go home every now and then, but it ain't like an everyday thing. And, like, because I still had that home fear thing of stomach still bothering me. And, like, my brother and them, they don't take me through the hood or nothing because they know how I am. I fringe up, I get mad, I start cussing. I don't know, it's just like, I just can't do it. And like, I stay around addicts a lot, man. Like, even at my job in Strat Erie, I work at Burger King, they come through, they be kicking it to me. And like, God is like, centered me. And like, I have some fears about my life, like the scary movies, living alone and stuff, but my whole crew gets high. And like, God told me, just look at you all around. And that makes me even stronger. I go pray and I get it off. And like, the program is shown in me because a lot of people look at me at work and be like, man, look what you missed. I said, I ain't missing nothing. Because once I start, well, none of y'all have nothing here. You know what I mean? And like, I was sharing with one of my coworkers. I said, and my manager, I was sharing with her, like, man, my manager, we got an open, you know, co-worker to manager I respect. And, like, I was telling her, I said, you wouldn't want to see the old Tony. Because the old Tony wasn't no guy you would want to be around. I had to explain to her that I don't ever train me for the cash register because I ain't there yet. I got some dope. I might be clean, but I just don't got another fear. You know what I mean? You know, and like God is showing me. So a couple of weeks ago, I was on a cash register, and she was there. And she was like, wow, I see you it's trying to break your fear of the cash register. I said, yeah, I am. Like, it's time to move from the back to the front and try to move on. You know what I mean? And, like, I'm trying to do things different. I'm trying to be somebody. I'm trying to move up and stuff. And I'm thinking about going back to school. And, like, this is all because of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, like, I'm known in my area. And, like, see, my puppy is 8 and 9. I do a lot of 8 and 9. And, like, I don't share that much in my area because I work a lot. But, man, do I travel a lot, too. I combine them. Whatever I miss in the area, I do it outside the area, and I travel. I went to Sharon, PA, a couple weeks ago, and the chairperson, the 8 and 9 chairperson, asked me to try to get me to come down there and share. And, like, that was God-given. You know, like, the program, it's all that to me. You know, when I hear somebody talk about the program don't do this and that, I get real upset. And see, my puppy thing is, inside my area is, well, it's the sponsorship thing. When some people, when a newcomer come in and they ask for a sponsor, they don't call them and then they want to sit in the meeting and then talk and bash them. I get mad about that. I say, man, I be saying to myself, who the heck do you think he is? You don't even call the guy. You matter of fact, you don't even say nothing to him when he come in the meeting. See, that's not even telling me. Because I take this program so seriously. You know what I mean? Like, I know for me, it took me 5 or 6 times to come around just to get what I got now. And, like, what I got now is a lot of knowledge in God. You know, there's some things that I got to work on. I'm in the middle of the third step. And, like, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. Up here at the spiritual retreat, getting fed. And, like, I know for me today, living the program, I'm doing the best of my ability of living the program. You know what I mean? I want the Lord Tony to come on and play like one of my sponsors said. And I'm trying to do that. And, like, I take my program everywhere. Work everywhere. You know, even a good pay of bill, the program comes out of me. You know what I mean? I want right to the right figure. Don't shortcut it. Just give me the right figure. You know what I mean? I don't cut corners. I try not to. You know, I don't try to let my team, my coworkers work, you know, call me in for stupid stuff. Because they want to go do some stupid stuff. You know, like, so I have a guy today, and, like, I use it. You know what I mean? I try to help anybody out. I share my experience and strength and hope. Man, my sponsor, we stayed up plenty of nights helping somebody stay clean. Then after that leave, I'm probably argue about it because I know I gotta go to work. But okay, I've done that. Okay, I done my day. Now I'm going to bed. Yeah. You know? Man, my sponsor, it's like big brother, little brother thing. You know what I mean? We real connected. You know what I mean? He there for me. I'm there for him. You know, it trickles down like that. You know what I mean? And like we had a sponsee family thing once a year. And, like, I made sure I was off work for it. And, like, I get to fellowship with a lot of guys from a different, lot of areas. Man, I met the guys from Johnstown, and I was real connected with them. Like, wow, what's up, fellas? How y'all going? I was going around hugging everybody, feeling good. Because I know for me, I got to spend some work. Now, check this out. I'm going to tell you how I was being greeted with North Carolina's anonymous. I called off work because I wanted to go to this meeting, and all I had to do was go to my boss and say, look here, y'all give me a little later, I'm going to the meeting. Instead of doing all that, I dope fiend and said, look here, I ain't coming in. I didn't tell nobody. And now my sponsor's like, why you suspended? Because I didn't do what you told me to do. I should have just run across to it. Man, so I'm sitting in a meeting 7 days suspended. You know, everybody's like, why you at all the meetings every day? Because I'm suspended. You know, I had my head down. I'm talking to protesters and stuff. I'm like, I got 7 days suspension. What you say? Oh, Tom, what you doing? I'm like, man, I messed up, and I supposed to do this. All I had to do was do this, but I did this, and, you know. And they was like, no, we don't know. Tell them. I said, man, I got to share this in a meeting. And I'm like, oh, man. So I stood by the podium, and I shared, and they were like, what? I choose for you and me. You know, I said, man. I got home, and God, oh, man, beat me up. Had me up all night, tossing and turning, grabbing the basic set. I said, man. I said, what the heck was I thinking? You know, like, God is like, I like the new Tony because, like, I'm doing things I never done. I'm saving money. I hide money from me. I'm serious. I put it in a bank and I put it up under my bed and then I forget about it and crazy stuff, man. I'd be like, looking at guys at work struggling, paying their child support, and I'd be at home. Okay. You know, and I'd be looking at that like, man, I stopped out with my brother to pay his child support. Because another recovering addict said, what are you, God? Now, I said, I thought I was doing a great deed. She said, yeah, right. And like I had to get right with that. I had to go to him and say, man, I can't do this no more. I don't feel right. He's like, all right. I said, okay. I wish I would have known that in the beginning. I said, man. And I'm doing some crazy. I mean, living clean and living up close, I was doing some crazy stuff. I'm talking some crazy stuff, man. I was like bouncing off the walls in my little room. I'm like, what the heck? I said, God, what am I doing? Get back to right. I got back to right. Started coming out. I kept seeing me all through the third step. I'm right there. I told my grandma, I said, man, I don't care, man. I'm doing this and that and that. And my sponsor and my grandmaster was like, man, that ain't cool. I mean, they both, he came to the door, like, I cut his hair, and he was like, how you get suspended? Oh, well, you know, this and that, not and this. He looked into the nature of it. I called off. You know, and didn't ask. Now I'm back right on track. God is like, got me sent. Got me still looking straight, doing the right thing. Because I get mad real quick, too. You know, like, I got this temper, man. Like, my home group, one of my home groups fired me. Check this out. Life on Lifetime showed up. I was a GSR. I was going to the area, but I wasn't bringing the information back. So they caught me on the stuff, right? So I got mad. I cussed them out. Man, y'all think y'all, oh, I'm at the area for y'all and this and that. And they said, hold up. Don't cuss us out. Where's the information? It's at my house. Well, why ain't it at the meeting? Oh, because I was tired. And it was like, oh, man. I said, man. I said, and then my father said, you sitting there cussing them out, ready to fight them, and you know you was wrong. I said, man. I said, let me go ahead and get this position up. Right. Oh, man. I couldn't believe it. I was like, man, I'm doing this crazy stuff, clean. You know, this topic is like right where I'm at, living the program. Doing the best I can. God's will, not mine. So sometimes I take it back and do my will, and I mess it up. I know for me, like, it's the step. It's the fellowship. Because the fellowship changes every day. But the book don't. And I know for me, like, standing up here is where I'm supposed to be. I never dreamed of it. I'm going to add it, man. You told me. Thank you.
Okay, we do have another speaker that we tried to rename right before the meeting. that's another issue. That's my issue, but that's okay. But this gentleman is from Pittsburgh, and I did not catch his home group. I'm lucky I could get the name right, so I'll give you Walt.
My name is Walter, and I'm an addict. And my home group is a Lawrenceville group, and it's always nice to be at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in any capacity, sitting out there listening, standing up there sharing, doing the H&I thing, whatever. And I want to thank the committee for asking me to speak, and this is the second year in a row I've been at this retreat, and it's really nice. What I got in touch with last year when I came up here is I am away from all the bullshit that I know and create when I come up here. I mean, I know a lot of people up here, but I don't know a lot about them, and I don't have all that nonsense bogging me down when I'm up here. And I can come up here, and I can listen, and I can hear, and I can, you know, it kind of takes me back to when I was new. And it's always nice to go back there when I was new. And no matter what topic I have to speak on, I always like all the topics except the one I got to speak on. If you ask me to speak on a topic, I want to tell my story. If you ask me to tell my story, I want a topic. That's just how I am. I've been like that all my life. But I never knew what was wrong with me. I always knew something was wrong with me, but I never knew what was wrong with me. And I went through living hell before I got to Narcotics Anonymous and found out what was wrong with me. You know, going to jail and, you know, using drugs. Started using drugs when I was 13 or 14 years old and didn't stop till I was 39. And not learning how to do anything, not knowing who you are, not knowing how to work. And my family, I mean, my father worked at the same place for 37 years, so I certainly did not learn how to work for my father. You know, I mean, I just was an addict, is what I found out when I come to Narcotics Anonymous, and nothing meant anything to me but using drugs once I started using drugs. And the last time I was in prison, it was probably the third time I was there, fourth time I was there, and I had used as much drugs as I could for as long as I could, and I was using in a cell with one of my brothers who's now clean and in the program, and the last time I used was with him, and the time before that I used, I was using snorting heroin and cocaine, and the drugs had worked physically and mentally. But the thing that they talk about in our basic text about the profound experience, the spiritual experience, I had one of them in this cell. And what happened is my whole life flashed in front of me. And it was like that moment that they talk about in the book where I was able to see for the first time in my life that I was a drug addict. I knew exactly why I was in that cell. I knew exactly why my brother was in the cell next to me because we was drug addicts. I mean, I was able, and it had absolutely nothing to do with me. believe me, it was like it scared me so bad, and I couldn't tell anybody. All I wanted to do was get my brother. I said, man, you better go over in your cell before the cop come around and look in here. And I laid down. I remember laying down on my bed and thinking, what just happened? I knew something had happened, but I didn't know what had happened. Now, 90 days from, well, I used one more time after that. We had got a visit, and we went out in the visiting room, and my brother said to his girl, where's the dope at? And she said, it's in his tent. What do you want me to do with it? And she said, give it to Walters. And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, you know, I ain't supposed to do this. For the first time in my life, I knew I wasn't supposed to do this, but I did not have what it took to not do it. So this is what I said to her. She handed me the pop can, and I said, where's it at? All loud. She said, in the pop can. I said, go get it out of the pop can and give it to me that way. And everybody in the visiting room was looking at me, but that was the way I communicated. I thought I said, I'm not doing that. That's what I learned. I mean, that's what I learned. You know, that's what you learn using dope and being around people that use dope and just, you know, nothing means anything to you. So she goes and does that, gives it to me. I do what I got to do. We get it in there. And I keep saying to myself, I'm not going to use this dope no more because whatever happened to me the other time, that might happen again. I'm just going to get it out and give it to my brother and I'm going to be done with it. So you know what happened when it comes time to do it. I had to try it again. I had to take that one last shot. I used it again. The same thing happened. It didn't work. I mean, it had probably hadn't worked in 10 years, but it definitely didn't work then. It just didn't do what it had been doing. So a guy who was, the first time I was in the penitentiary, I was there for selling dope to the police, heroin. The last time I was in prison, I was there for selling Barry Fountain and 16 bags of cream more on Halloween. So it definitely got worse. And I did it thinking, you know, I mean, I don't know where we come up with some of this shit we come up with. I thought that they wouldn't do anything to me for doing that. That's why I done it, because I was tired of going to jail. When I went in front of that judge, he wasn't too happy about that. Not only wasn't he too happy, I had started opening my mouth, and it really made him mad. He sat up there on the bench, and, you know, they always say, do you have anything to say before I sentence you? And I remember my mother telling me, when they ask you that, she said, look them straight in the eye and tell them something. And every time that it would come, I would say, I'm going to do it. And when it comes time to do it, I would just put my head down and say, no, I don't have nothing to say. But this time, I said, I can't wait till he asked me, because I'm going to tell him. So this poor judge says, do you have anything to say, Mr. Schaefer, before I pronounce sentence? I said, Your Honor, as a matter of fact, I do. I said, first of all, I said, I wasn't in the street committing no crimes the night of this was alleged supposed to happen. I said, these people called me at my mother's house on my mother's phone and wanted me to get them some dope. And I thought to myself, I wanted to discourage them from the life that I knew so well. So I gave them 16 bags of cream oil. This judge was looking at me like, you damn fool. He said, you done yet? And I said, yeah, I'm done. He takes his glasses off. He said, now I listen to you. He said, now I want you to listen to me. He said, you have sold dope. He said, I read your pre-sentence investigation report, and my decision to incarcerate somebody has never been easier. He said, you sold dope in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and you're going to sell dope every chance you get. He said, and that story that you just told me, he said, that was the worst story I've ever heard in my whole life. He said, and the scary part is I think you believe that story. And he said, the only trouble I had, he said, I didn't know if I was going to give you 18 months or 24 months in prison. He said, but I'm definitely giving you 60 the longest. So he gave me 18 to 60 months. And I'm standing there thinking, why did I open my mouth to this church? So I couldn't wait to get down to penitentiary because I could go down there and get dope. I mean, we was getting dope in the county jail, but because when I ended up in the county jail that time, I couldn't wear no shoes on my feet. I had abscesses all over my body. That cocaine had completely finished me. I mean, I didn't eat, I didn't sleep, I didn't drink. I mean, I was finished. The only thing I could relate to was drugs. And thank God there was a guy, he just left here too, he was up there. He was getting dope in there, and we was doing it, and all that, but I couldn't wait to get down the well where I could operate a lot better because I was down there before. His brother would send my brother the money, and he would bring me the dope down, and we'd be in his cell trying to get a hit. We couldn't get a hit between us. We didn't know if it was dope, coke, or burn. We didn't even know what it was, and we couldn't even get it in us. So it got to be such an aggravation down there using them works, because you couldn't keep them in your cell. The rangers would tell them where the works was. They would find them and tell the guards. So I started sniffing the dope. That's how I ended up sniffing it when I was at Mercy. And the guy who was on the case for burning the police with me on Halloween, he got probation when I got 18 to 60 months. And he got clean. And he come to visit me. And my ex was on another case with me. She went to Muncie on that case. She come home and she was strung up when she come to visit me. Her, my co-defendant on the other case, my son and my mom come to visit me. This guy's sitting in the visiting room. He told me, I go to meetings and I don't get high no more. And this guy, I did everything with this guy. And he left. And I really wasn't impressed with him being clean. I mean, I thought, my definition of being clean then was, if you shot dope, you quit shooting dope and just eat pills or something. That was my definition. So 90 days from the last time that I used, I was going to come home. And I went and seen the pool guy, and they, you know how they talk to us. I sit down at this desk, and he's going through my records and looking up at me, you know. He said, you know, with people like you, I'll always have a job. And I thought to myself, I think I should be offended by that. But normally I would have been, but because of this experience that I had in that cell, I was a completely different person. I just didn't know how different. And I said, I'm looking at him, and I said, he said, if you don't live in a certain zip code, you can't go home. I said, if I don't live in a certain zip code, I can't go home. I never heard of that one. I said, I've been in prison plenty of times. I never heard of that one. He said, what does that mean? He said, well, if you don't live in, well, we can put you in a certain parole officer, a high-intensity supervision drug unit, you can't go home. He said, where you live? I said, 15PC4. He said, oh, you're all right. And he looks at me, and he says, if you don't have a needle somewhere in your body the first 24 hours you're released from this prison, it'll be an act of God. I said, I want you to do me a favor. I said, I want you to do whatever you can do to get me a shot to go out there and see what happens. He said, I'll see what I can do. To make a long story short, I got a date, and I come on. But this guy who was my co-defendant, he come and pick me up. My ex was with him, and my mom was with him, and my son. My ex was strung out. Everybody in my half, five brothers and two sisters, they were all strung out. They're all in this house. My mother's poor house. I had thought I had turned it out. 2 years later, when I come home, there's a basement, first, second, and third floor, and any floor you went on, you could get high on something. I mean, you couldn't get a clean urine from my dog. I mean, it was bad there. And this guy wants to take me. He wanted to take me to a meeting. I said, I got things to do, places to go, and people to see with that important goofy shit, you know? Just was scared to go. He said, that's all right, no problem. Go ahead. He said, I'll see you tomorrow. So I go in his house, and I'm in there fighting with my niece, my brother, my ex, telling them they shouldn't be getting high, and I'm not getting high, and blah, blah, blah. I managed to get through that day and that night with no drugs, not using no drugs. The next morning, this guy come to my house and he blows the horn. This is a guy that used to ride me. We was on three different methadone programs together over like a 20-year period, and I would do the same thing, say, wait 1 minute, get dressed, so we go get our meth. I looked out the window and my heart started pounding. I said, there he is. You know, and I knew he wanted to take me to one of them meetings, and I said, wait 1 minute. I went and got dressed. And he took me to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. Now, I had been to Narcotics Anonymous meetings before, you know, like maybe three or something like that. And I always thought that it was a great idea for everybody in the room. I mean, I can remember that real clear, thinking that. You know, I never counted myself into nothing good, never. So I go get dressed, I go up there. He takes me to a meeting probably three blocks from my mother's house. This was February 1991. And I had 90 days clean that day. The meeting isn't there no more and hasn't been there for years. He takes me to this meeting, and everybody in the meeting's hugging me. And, of course, every time a girl hugs me, I'm thinking, mm-hmm. And every time a guy hugs me, I want to throw up. But I was, you know, I was going along with things, hugging everybody. And nowadays, I'm sitting with these people, and the people's here now, and they say, how long have you been clean? I was thinking about this when I was doing clean time down there at the main meeting. Everybody knows how long they've been clean, no matter what. I figured it all out. I said, I've been clean 90 days today. This is how our minds work. She said, are you going to get a key case? I said, oh, yeah, I'm going to get one. I thought you filled out a form and they mailed it to you. Nobody ever told me that. I just started in my head. So they get up there and start giving out the key tags, and they're like, go ahead up and get one. I'm like, go ahead up and get one. I go up there and get it, and people's clapping and singing and hollering. And I was like, I don't know about this. It kind of felt all right in a way, and in a way I just felt like I was so exposed to something. And then I had 90 days. I had just did 2 years in the prison, and I was kind of, you know, my head was clear of drugs anyways. I mean, I had no clue of much other than that. And I remember this guy talking about, and I remember thinking in my head, I'm going to go to this meeting, and I'm going to figure out and wait for them to say how they stay clean and get the secret, and I'll be fine. So I hear this guy, Ken, who ultimately ended up being my sponsor. He talked about not using no drugs today. I said, there it is. I haven't used no drugs for 90 days, and I did it by not using that day. I said, that's the secret right there. I got it. I remember taking a deep breath. And then I went to another meeting after that, and then another meeting after that. Then the next day I went to another meeting, and now they started that shit about, do you have a sponsor? And I was like, damn, a sponsor? I already go to these damn meetings. Ain't that enough? I mean, that's how I was. I said, I'm going to fix these people. I'm going to get a sponsor. I asked this guy that I knew since I was a little kid. He was clean for, I don't know, probably 18 years at that point, 15, whatever. I said, I'm going to ask him to be my sponsor so I can tell him I got a sponsor. They said, you get a sponsor? I said, I got a sponsor. I thought that, you know, I put this move down. Meantime, this guy was the best. When you talk about living the program, this guy is the guy who taught me how to live this program. He used to pick me up at my house every morning and take me to eat breakfast. He would take me to see my pro-officer. He gave me a job in his business. The pro-officer used to come up there and make me pee in a bottle. I had to go there and pee in a bottle. He would come to my house. I had to be in at 8 o'clock. That machine would call me up and say, Ohio, Alabama, California, and I would have to say all that. And this guy used to just always share things with me that I had no idea what he was saying, why he was saying it. I thought he was retarded or something. I mean, he just spent so much time with me, this guy. And he was real crazy. He used to do the meeting down at Western Penitentiary, and he would try to take me down there when I was on parole. I said, I am not going down the penitentiary till I get off parole. I got off parole, I think, on a Wednesday. He took me there Friday, 1994, I think, in July. I've been going there ever since. He got killed in an airplane crash. Halloween will be 5 years he's been dead. And when he was doing that with me, I used to always wonder why he would be doing the things with me that he did with me and share the things that he shared with me. I remember one day we was going to eat lunch, and he said, his sponsor been clean probably for 40 years in the other fellowship. That's where he got started at, my sponsor. And my sister was married to his sponsor's cousin or something, and he's an attorney. And he's telling me this story about his sponsor's sponsor dying, and he's a lawyer, and he got a truck driver to be his sponsor within 24 hours. And I'm looking at this guy, so why is this guy telling me this shit? Why would he tell me this crazy story? I don't even want to hear this stuff. I would look at him and say, yeah, Okay, that's great. That's beautiful. You know what I mean? I mean, that's how you are when you're a dude. You know what I mean? That didn't make sense to me till he was dead and I was at his, in a funeral home at his funeral and I didn't have no sponsor. And that story came back to me. I said, this is why he told me that story. I got a sponsor at his funeral, in the funeral home. He's still my son. And I still do the meetings down at penitentiary. I still have a sponsor. I still go to meetings. I still have a home group. I still pray. I remember a guy, I would pray when I was in jail, and I have no idea what even why I even started to pray. I used to lay in the bed at night and pray. And I would just say, help my son, help my family, help me. I never would ask him to keep me clean or nothing. I learned that when I come to N.A. Then in the morning, I would get up and I would lay in the bed because I had ended up in these trailers with all these beds. Everybody could see you, and I definitely wouldn't get on my knees and pray in that situation. I mean, I learned how to do that here. And when I came home, this guy that I was in prison with in the 70s, he had killed somebody and had a life sentence and ended up getting it cut to 5 years and went home. And then we was in the county jail the last time I was down there, and we was pretty close. And he got clean. He was clean in county jail. I said, I'm going home. I'm going to stay clean. Somebody gave him my number, and he called me on the phone, and he said, I heard you was home. How you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And he says, do you pray? And I'm trying to figure out what he wants me to say. We're so damn goofy, I'm telling you. I think back in times when I was new, and I'm saying, I'm trying to wait for him to say something that he wants me to say, because that's how you are when you don't know who you are and where you're at and where you come from, where you're going. And he said, well, I'm just saying that. He says, if you like what you're doing, he said, they told me, and he said, I'm going to tell you, he says, you ain't praying, you ain't saying. The phone jumped out of my hand. I got down on my knees and started to pray, and I've been praying ever since. My prayers ain't no outlandish prayers. I ask God every morning to help me. I start my day off every morning. I ain't like Drew. I don't pray before I pee. I get up and pee. I put the coffee on and I go pray. And then I have some meditation books I read. I read the meditation books. And because I never worked, this guy gave me a job in his business. I was talking to this guy about this today, telling this story. And now I'm home, I think, 3 months. I got 6 months clean. And he says, my sponsor says, I'm going to Florida. He said, because my house is just about built down there, and I have to go and get the furniture and all this. He said, and when I go, I want you to take care of things here for me. You know what I said, what all new those things say. I can't do that. He said, you don't have no choice. He says, I'm giving you the keys when I leave, and you're either going to run the business or you're going to close it down. Is that simple? So I said, okay, I'm thinking, man. I said, I probably could do that if he leaves Friday and comes back Monday or Tuesday. One day comes, he said, I'll tell you the morning I'm leaving. He comes and picks me up, gives me the keys, tells me what to do with the money. He said, get it to my wife, do this, I'll call you every day, blah, blah, blah. And he said, you think you could do it? I said, yeah, I could probably do it till you get back Monday or Tuesday. He said, I'm going to be gone for 5 weeks. And he left and left me in charge of his whole business. Now, I don't know if anybody sitting here, anybody ever believes in you like somebody believed in me like that. But when you don't believe in yourself and somebody believes in you like that, that does something to you, man. I mean, I have never forgot that. And I never had a driver's license. I went on to get my driver's license, and I started to work. And today I have two of my own business. I work for myself. I don't have no bosses. My life is, I mean, when I think of my life today, I've been with this girl since I got clean, over 10 years now. And she always tells me, she says, I know a lot of people. I've known you since you was a young kid. I don't know anybody that took more LSD than you. I mean, when I was a teenager, I was drinking 80 milligrams of meth, and this was one of the times when I was trying to get myself together, and then I was mixing MDA, THC, and LSD together and shooting it. And she's like, she said, I don't know anybody that took more drugs than you. And she said, you are one of the most stablest people that I ever met in my whole life. She said, I can look at my watch anywhere she travels a lot. She said, I could be anywhere in the world and I can look at my watch and I know exactly where you're at. And she said, that's just, you know, when people tell you that, even Timmy was sharing with me today, or no, last night he started sharing this stuff with me about me that I never even knew. And I was like, damn, I never even thought of it like that, man. You know, about being with the same girl as long as I've been with her, doing the same thing, the same businesses and all that, and just being still, you know, and that's basically what Living the Program has come down to me today. Because I've worked the 12 steps, and I mean, you're never done, but my sponsor taught me about the 12 steps. The essence of our 12 steps is trust God, clean house, and help others. And trusting God is, you know, I trust God and I have faith, but my problem lies with patience. I can't wait. I really have trouble waiting. And what the program has done for me in that area is I change without even knowing it. Because I'm the type of guy that if I have a chance to resist it, I will resist it. I will get scared and I will fight it and I'll get, you know, just real goofy. And, you know, I was on a real level playing for quite some time now, and I've been just getting, people just been getting on my nerves. You know, at my home group, I done cussed about three different people out real good at my home group over the last probably 6 weeks. And I talked to my sponsor about it, and he really doesn't feel the same way I feel about it. He just don't believe in doing them things. I do. You know, some people, you know, you just, it's kind of like, some people, you can talk to them all day long and they'll shake their head, yeah, okay, and they'll do the same thing to you the next day. But there's something about when you go back to what you know and you say it to them the way you know how to say it to them, they're okay with you for about 6 months anyway. I mean, and that's just the way that it is. I mean, at other meetings, I try not to be like that, but at my home group, this guy told me at my home group about 3 weeks ago, he said, shut that fucking door. I said, are you talking to me? I mean, I went straight there. I said, when this meeting's over, I said, I'll see you when the meeting's over. And I swear, I can't believe I didn't jump on it. And that's one thing I'm very proud of myself of. Over the last 10 years and 9 months, I have not put my hands on nobody. You know, and that's the way I used to resolve everything. If you didn't do what I want you to do the way I want to do you, I would put my hands on you. And I learned here not to do that. When I had just finished up my fifth step, I said, man, I can't wait to do this. It's done, and I'm going to take me a nice break. My sponsor's son was in the program. He got killed with him, too, by the way. And we were at a meeting one night, and I probably had about 13 months clean, something at the time. I had just given my fifth step, and he came up behind me and clicked me in my ear, my sponsor's son. But I didn't know it at the time. I thought the first thing, you know how fast your mind works. I thought to myself, who did I just see that I burned or did something through that just smacked me in my head? And I turned around and looked, and it's my sponsor's son. He runs in the bathroom. It was at Roof Street, the meeting. And I go in the bathroom, and I said, what would ever make you do something like that to me? Now listen to what he says. He says, I'm real sorry, but what's wrong with you? Did you get in a fight with your girlfriend? I said, what does that got to do with you putting your hands on me? You know, but what I learned from that is I thought that I should have put my hands on him, and I didn't, and I told his dad about it, and his dad told me, Walter, whatever you do, remember, that's my son. And that really helped me because I had other experiences that I wanted to do it, and I didn't do it because of that experience. I knew that I didn't have to do it, and I couldn't do it. Now, there's another guy who tried to set me up when I was selling dope in the bag, and the police come to my house and they put my mother in jail. Now I'm at this meeting, and here comes this guy walking in the meeting. I said, man, there ain't no way I'm going to do something to this guy. Here, I got you. So I go to my sponsor, and I talk to him about it, and he said, Walter, I'm going to tell you exactly what to do with this guy. He said, when you pray tonight, he said, pray for him. I said, what? He said, the next time you see him, he said, go over to him and hug him. I said, man, you must be out of your mind. He said, just try. Just try. Because of that experience in that cell, I had whatever it took to do the things that I needed to do when I was new. And I did it. I went home and I prayed for this guy. The next time I seen him, it was just really one of them hard things to do. I went and I hugged him. Of course, this didn't happen that fast. It took a couple of hugs and a couple of prayers, but it worked. You know, I couldn't deny it. I was one of them people, and I heard somebody saying about this when they shared one of these meetings since I've been up here, about you look for reasons to discount what they tell you and discount what this program is about, and it hasn't happened to me yet. When somebody has told me to do something, especially my sponsors, and I do it, it has worked every time. Every time. And I wouldn't trade what I got for nothing in the world. I mean, I live a life further than my wildest dreams and imaginations. I go wherever I want to go. I do whatever I want to do. And when I was new, I used to hear people share things, and I used to think I knew what they meant. But the longer that I'm here and the more I do the things that I need to do, I experience it over and over, a deeper meaning of that. And I remember Josh one time talking about the difference between a winner and a loser. And she said the difference was is a loser does what he wants to do and a winner does what he's got to do. And that's kind of what I do in this program. And the things that I don't want, the more I don't want to do something, the more I have to do it. But I have a very, very stable program in terms of I just developed very, very good habits and was taught very, very well in the beginning. Timmy told me when I was new, he said, if you don't got a God, you better get one. I tell the people that I sponsor the same thing. If you don't got one, you better get one because you're going to need them. And all these things you're doing, you wonder why you're doing them since I've been clean. Besides my sponsor getting killed in an airplane crash, it was just so. My lawyer called me up on the phone and asked me that I know what happened to Billy. I said, no. He said, he got killed in an airplane crash. I said, how could he have got killed in an airplane crash and he drove to Florida? He said, well, I'm telling you, he got killed in an airplane crash. I just hung up the phone from a bird, as a matter of fact. And he called me, and then I called his house, and sure enough, it was true. And that's when your program will get tested. And then another time, probably, I'm trying to think of how long I was clean when this happened, June 90. I was clean for almost 4 years or something, and I had just started this one business that I have, and I just bought a brand new van, and I was out on the road working, and I'm driving down this highway, and this young kid crossed my lane, and I go hit him broadside right in the door. And it was a very serious accident. My truck flipped over, I don't know how many times, and I ended up, my truck was upside down. I had to come out the back doors, and I went over to the car, and it was like, you could just tell it wasn't good. And then all these people were trying to help the people in the other car, and police come, and they had a helicopter come there to life flight this girl to the hospital. But by the time the helicopter got there, the girl had died. And they end up putting me in a helicopter and life flight me to the hospital. And so I'm laying there in the street when the paramedics come. They're trying to get an IV in me, and I'm laying on the ground, and I don't have no veins. And I'm like, all I know what to do is pray. I'm just laying on this ground, this highway, and they're saying, this guy don't got no veins. Look how slowed up his hands is. Look, I'm like, oh, my God, please help me. I'm just praying. And now they end up getting an IV in there. Now they life flight me to this hospital, and when you go to a trauma center, they're like waiting there for you, and they cut off all your clothes. You end up in this room with this big bright light shining down on you. There's about 10 people around you, and they're trying to go in my groin to get blood, and my groin is, that might be the worst part of me from shooting double shots in my feet and legs. My groin just has so much scar tissue. They said, Mr. Schaefer, what happened to your groin area? And I said, this is a long story. And they said, well, did you try to commit suicide? I said, well, kinda. I said, but it's a long story. But I mean, you're just laying there praying. Then the state police come in and they said, will you let us take blood out of you, or do we have to go get a court order? I said, you can take blood out of me. You can do whatever you want. He stood there and supervised the doctor where he took the blood out of me. And I'm thinking to myself, he's going to have to stick his needle all over me to get this blood. And this state cop is just standing there looking at me. Now they look at you when your hands are all swollen up and you ain't got no veins anyway. And I'm just laying there on the bed praying away. Got to stick the needle in my arm and blood jumped right up in the outfit. I said, thank you, God. But at times like that there is when you find out what kind of program you got. And my ex, who went to prison with me the one time, she was clean for 9 years, and her and my son was in Florida, and she ended up coming back here, and she's not doing good now. And, it's things like that make me, make you work the program even when you don't want to. And I have come so far because of this program. I know exactly who I am because of this program. I know exactly where I came from. I try not to forget that. That's what I like about the penitentiary meeting. Every Friday I go there, and if any reservations, any problems that might have arose during the week, if they ain't resolved on the ride down there, they're resolved on the walk back through the yard. I sit down there with guys that that I've been in shootouts with and robbed, stuck places up with, and sometimes I can't help but just look around that room and look at these guys. I say, why are them here and me coming in? I've got this picture ID with my name on it, says an NA volunteer. This program has just completely changed my life. I'm able to be a parent today. I'm able to be, my two brothers have gotten clean during the program now, and I've been praying for them for 10 years. And it's funny how you want to do whatever you can to get them clean, and there ain't nothing you can do to get them clean. Then they get clean, and you shift right into the other gear. How can I keep them clean and keep them here? And it's the same thing, nothing. You pray. And they taught me that, to try to bite my tongue when I'm with them and bite my lip, because I want to always tell them what to do and how to do it and when to do it and who to do it with. And I've been doing so good for that. I just look at it as an opportunity for me to really see me. And I couldn't imagine my life any other way than in Narcotics Anonymous. And I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you.
Okay, where am I? I do want to thank both of you guys, Tony and Walter, again, for speaking. It was beautiful. Okay, can we have somebody read just for today, please?
Some days I wake up and I feel 99. Good evening, family. My name's Terrence Griffin Covenant. Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. Thank you.
Okay, we will close with the we version of the Serenity Prayer. Can we go the whole way around the fire without getting burnt? Okay, can we Can we have a moment of silence for the still suffering addict? Just remember the one, the addict that we'll pick up for the last time tonight and give their life. And let's also say a special prayer for the addicts who will pick up the first time tonight, not knowing that the program is out there. Let's hold our heads up. We've hung them long enough. Who's Father?
God. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Power and glory forever. Amen.
You come back and worship the Lord.